Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jones! Bowden! He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. I'll look back at the third day's play from Adelaide. Simon, can we just cancel this podcast? It's going badly for England. It's going so badly. It's going to all our worst predictions. Our worst fears have been realised. England are being hammered from all sides. What can we say? What can we say that's encouraging at all?
Not a great deal, I think, from an England perspective. I mean, the two players who have stood up have been David Malan and Joe Root. And a quick resume of today's play. They came out and batted beautifully in the morning session, or the first session of the day. 123 runs for no wickets at lunch from 32.2 overs. I mean, riches beyond their wildest dreams, really. If you'd offered England that at the start, I mean, even they, I think, could barely believe what they were about to achieve. So at lunch, 140 for two, and then Australia tightened up, line changed ends, the inevitable collapse, wickets going down, some of them frittered away. Malan out for 80, Root for 62, and Australia putting the skids under England. They were bowled out under lights for 236. Ben Stokes, the penultimate man out for 34, forced to have a hack at Green and was bowled. Stuart Broad, last man out, skying off Stark, who finished with 4 for 37. Australia didn't enforce the follow-on. They batted under lights and they weren't in too much trouble against a rather lacklustre England. And the one wicket that did fall was to a run out when Harris and Warner had a big mix-up. Warner was run out. So Australia with a big lead, 282 runs ahead, 9 wickets in hand, 2 days to go, and it's hard to see any other result than an emphatic Australia victory.
Well, our predictions from yesterday were actually quite close. We both said round about 20 for 1 Australia in their second innings, and they're 45 for 1. The only thing is, you said that England wouldn't probably save the follow-on and would be conceding a large lead, and I said England would save the follow-on and wouldn't be conceding a large lead. So you were closer than I was there. I said my prayers at the gospel choir carol service last night. They haven't worked because I don't want to say pitiful the way England collapsed, but it was predictable, and it was so disappointing because that sort of post-lunch or post-first session situation was so encouraging. And it was a false hope, wasn't it? Because they just seemed to get mesmerised as ever by Nathan Lyon. And then, you know, wickets fall at the other end. And there just seems to be a sort of inevitability about it, doesn't there? Which, it's frustrating. I know the pitch actually isn't that easy. I mean, I will say that. I think this pitch, even from the start of the first day, it did something. And you have to hand it to the exemplary batting of Australia to get to what they did, 470-odd in the first innings. It's not a 470-odd pitch, is it?
Well, Australia showed great discipline on the first day. I think, you know, that was the day they really won. 221 for two on the first day. They toughed it out. It wasn't great cricket. It was turgid, and I said at the time, rather tongue-in-cheek, it was a bit like watching two teams battle out a 0-0 draw in a football match, or at least play for 0-0 and try and nick one on the break. Well, you know, Australia did really nick one on the break effectively in that first day, because they managed to resist England only losing those two wickets, and just built the base really from which they could build on the second day. And if you bat for 2 days, or best part of 2 days, generally in the modern game you're looking at 550, 600, but they found it hard to score and build that really massive score. It's big enough, and it often is with England these days, because their batting is so brittle. But and there was so much encouragement. I mean, Milan and Root, in their contrasting styles. Milan was a bit flirty, actually. I mean, but he played some nice shots down the ground. He cut, and that was actually his ultimate downfall. But he also had two cut shots outside the offside that went just past his leg stump, you know, during his innings. So he could easily have played on. So he had a bit of good fortune. But he does seem, you know, he's well organised enough, isn't he? And he's confident enough. And I think it's helped the fact that he did get those runs in Australia last time. He likes the conditions here, or these type of conditions. And I also think it's helped that he's got runs in T20 cricket. I think that's, you know, he believes that he has a place at international level. And the fact he's still, he's gone back to being the world's number one T20 player, you know, it must be good for your confidence, isn't it, as you stride out to bat, that you have success in one form and you've had a bit of success in the other, and you can make it work. And, you know, he's got a couple of 80s, and I think he's quite pleased, you know, with the way he's going. And what you need from him, of course, though, is to go on and make a 100, produce the sort of scores that Australian batsmen generally produce. I mean, Labuschagne making 100 in this game, admittedly Smith and Warner are just missing out, and Warner missing out as well at the Gabba. But it needs someone for England, if they get in, to score 150, and that's the bottom line. So I suppose the most disappointing dismissal was Joe Root, because you felt while he was there, there's a confident solidity about England's batting. But he tried to run one from Green, and Green just got one to bounce a bit and move away a fraction. It was only just enough. And Root edging it to slip. And from that moment, you just thought, I don't know, it's a really strange feeling. 153 suddenly, and you just thought, well, England are suddenly under pressure here. Lyon was bowling to two left-handers, so he could put them under pressure, Milan and Stokes. And Australia just, they bowled lots of maidens, and England just went nowhere in that middle session, and they were unable to recover. They just buckled under the pressure.
Look, stats don't lie. Joe Root has scored more than 1,000 runs more than the next person in the England batting team this year. He's scored, look, is he getting on for 1,700 runs now in the calendar year? And the next is 450, Rory Burns or something like that. I mean, the difference, the disparity is quite extraordinary. Now, there are one or two mitigating factors, like, for instance, Ben Stokes, who would have been the second probably in that list, hasn't played much Test cricket this year because of his sort of sitting out quite a few matches. But still, the discrepancy is extraordinary. I mean, one can't praise Root highly enough. Interestingly, he seems to have found a slight nemesis in Cameron Green. And you identified him as someone who was a potential threat, I think more with the bat in this series as a number six. He hasn't made a run. But his bowling is definitely a threat. And I think for two reasons that Root finds him hard. One, obviously, because of his extra height. And tall bowlers, very tall bowlers, are hard to gauge their length. And you get drawn into playing at balls you shouldn't play at against tall bowlers because it takes that bit longer to pick up the line and the length because of the height of their release. And the other thing is, he bowls from very close to the stumps, rather similar to Glenn McGrath, how Glenn McGrath used to bowl. And because he bowls with his left foot more or less on leg stump at the non-striker's end, he can bowl pretty much wicket to wicket. And it draws you into playing at balls you shouldn't play at, which clearly, in this case, Root has. Well, a couple of times he's played at balls he didn't need to play at and obviously edged behind. But, I will say just one other thing, and that is that we talked in a previous podcast about England's inadequacy generally because of the county structure, because of the fact that batsmen have to bat at the beginning and the end of the summer when the pitches are nibbling around and medium pacers get all the wickets. And therefore, you know, their technique against better, quicker bowling isn't particularly good, and they're not sure what to leave and what to play. I also think the scheduling of the cricket county championship is denying batsmen, English batsmen, the chance to play against good spin, because there isn't much good spin, you know, around. And Simon Harmer would be the one honourable exception playing for Essex. So therefore, England's, especially younger batsmen, are not very good against spin. I mean, Root is outstanding, but the rest can't really handle Nathan Lyon. You can look at Ollie Pope. He doesn't really know what to do. He's shuffling up and down the wicket and he looks fidgety and on edge. I don't think Stokes plays spin all that well. Again, he hasn't been exposed to it all that much, certainly not in county cricket. And, you know, lower order players just look like sitting ducks against Nathan Lyon, who is an excellent bowler, but he's not unplayable and nobody plays a shot against him. He bowls 14 overs for 17 runs or something, which is just allowing him to totally dictate. And that surely is a product of English batsmanship just not being exposed to good spin.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a problem for a while now, and it's something we've highlighted many times on this podcast. I mean, where are the top-class spinners? Where are the Nathan Lyons? I mean, if England had Lyon in their side, you know, at least they'd better control an end and also be a threat. I really felt that Lyon was going to have an influence on this game, and he already has in this first innings. He could have an even bigger influence in the second innings. The ball is turning and bouncing. And it's a good point you make about England playing against Lyon. You know, they have struggled, and traditionally they've struggled. I mean, you know, he's over 400 test wickets, because last Australian summer, Lyon was up against the Indian batsman, and they are good players of spin, and they were able to master him. He took his wickets at, you know, at quite high cost, and that's one of the reasons why India were able to come to Australia and win, because Lyon wasn't able to control the game in quite the same way as he's able to do against England. But he did it last time, and he's doing it again, and I think this is a nice pitch for him to bowl on. He's got a very good record at the Adelaide Oval. You know, he's high up on the list of test wicket takers at the Adelaide Oval. And what was interesting today, he bowled in the morning session and he was relatively innocuous. Root did take him on. He hit him back over his head early on. I think it was a second over, first ball, Root down the pitch, bang, over towards long on. It would have been a six on most grounds, but not the Adelaide Oval, because the long straight boundaries are so vast. And then I don't know whether something was said at lunchtime or during the first break in the Australian dressing room. It was a completely different attitude when they came out. They squeezed in, line changed ends, and actually got a bit more turn and bounce, you know, bowling from the other end, from the commentary box, the cathedral end of the ground. And Australia were away. And once Green got rid of Root, they were just able to squeeze. And I agree with you. I mean, Pope, he just looks out of sorts against spin, and Butler's shot. Well, it was just so predictable. Full length ball from start, big drive, nicked off. You know, he was on naught for a long time. And he's just having one. He's having a Burns test match, isn't he, Butler? He dropped a catch. He's got a duck. And, you know, it must have undermined you. You've dropped simple catches. It's bound to undermine you. You know, just scramble your mind or whatever. And I was actually watching Butler in the nets the other evening, on the evening before the game. And he was nicking them, and, you know, not middling them, and, you know, he was out sort of three or four times, you know, out in the net sense. And so I don't know whether he's lacking confidence, although, you know, he did play quite well in that first innings at the Gabba. But, you know, you wonder whether this might be his last series as England's wicketkeeper batsman. I mean, he's such a talented player. And it might be a bit premature, but I mean, are we getting to the stage where, you know, England are going to have to change their batting lineup for the next test match? I mean, we'll probably wait and see what happens in the second innings, but I don't give them much hope of surviving this test match.
No, I mean, lots of criticism of Butler. People perhaps rather unfairly saying, you know, he's not a very good batsman in test cricket, but he's not the best keeper England have either. They're claiming that Bairstow is better. I don't think there's much to choose between them keeping-wise, actually. And Bairstow hasn't had a great run of runs in test cricket either. I suppose in the end, Ben Foulkes has got to be the solution. You know, in a way, partly because England's bowling attack is largely focused on perseverance and attrition and maintaining a consistency and getting, you know, the odd chance to take wickets, especially abroad, and you've got to be able to accept those chances. And if you miss them, it just deflates the team, and you have to wait another 20 overs before another chance. So you do need your best keeper, I think, especially overseas. In England, where the bowlers can generate a lot more chances because of the consistency of the Duke's ball and the more kind of conducive conditions to bowl in, maybe you don't need your best keeper, because there are going to be more chances even if you miss a few. And you want someone who can make an impact with the bat. But perhaps overseas, where, you know, chances are less common, less regular, you do want your best keeper, because you don't want those chances to be shelled.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting point, actually. You do feel here that chances are a premium. So if you drop one, it feels like a massive moment. Whereas in England, yeah, you always feel there's another chance just around the corner. England were able to, I mean, they created, I mean, Labuschagne was out four times, wasn't he, in his innings. So they were able to sort of knock him off quite quickly. So that in a way, the Butler drop, it wasn't that costly, really. But you know, you're right, it does feel so deflated. Well, the second one wasn't costly, but the first one was. And, you know, quite a difficult chance on 21. And you feel, I don't know, would folks have called that? You don't know, do you? You just, it's impossible to say. But Yeah, so there are England do create fewer chances here. So every time there's one dropped, the scrutiny inevitably is so much greater.
Well, if you're English, you're probably not feeling like a beer right now. But cheer yourself up and order some craft beers for the festive period from Beer 52. Beer 52 are a craft beer supplier like no other, sending experts around the globe to find the best beer available anywhere on the planet. And in true Christmas spirit, Beer 52 are offering listeners of this podcast 10 free beers. All you have to do is go to www.beer52.com/cricket and cover £5.95 for postage to claim your free case. Each month, Beer 52 members receive a new case, usually from a different part of the world. Members have had beers from more than 40 countries in the past few weeks. As well as the excellent beer, you'll also get two tasty snacks supplied with your free case. Go to beer52.com/cricket. After claiming your free case, you'll join the monthly beer club, £24 a month. No minimum commitment. Pause or cancel any time. And enjoy.
Now, part of your BBC commentary team is Ian Chappell, you know, who's probably quite... I mean, I've noticed a mellowness in him over the last few years. You know, he's a kind of dyed-in-the-wool Aussie. And, you know, obviously... Interesting kind of history to Ian Chappell in a way. His grandfather was Vic Richardson, who played in the Bodyline series and was tormented by Larwood and Vose and so on, and obviously humiliated by England in that series. And then Chappell himself, the grandson of Vic Richardson, came into the captaincy of Australia in the 70s and really wanted to exact a revenge for all the Bodyline tales he'd heard from his grandfather. And so he unleashed Lillian Thompson on England, obviously, in that famous 74-75 series, and he clearly has been keen to, you know, crush England every time he's played. But actually, as a commentator over the last few years, I think he almost sounds a bit more sympathetic to England's plight. Do you see it like that?
Well, it might be because he's commentating on the BBC, so he knows his audience. He's still pretty forthright. I'm interested to see what his commentary is like on ABC, where he probably gives the Poms both barrels. Yeah, I mean, 75 test matches, 30 as captain, 16 as Ashes captain, Ian Chappell. But I mean, he's still pretty forthright. He doesn't think Joe Root's a great captain, and he doesn't think Jos Buttler should be England's wicketkeeper. He thinks it should be Folks. You always pick your best wicketkeeper, is what he says. But I mean, we are in the modern game. You know, they have to be able to bat as well. Of course, Folks can bat, and he's got a test century. You know, England might revisit that. It's funny, actually, when I think back, you know, quite a few years ago now, it's going back 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, Johnny Bairstow was England's wicketkeeper batsman. He was batting at number 7 and it was going well. But they wanted more from Bairstow with the bat, and they had problems elsewhere. They gradually bumped him up the order, and it hasn't worked. And for me, Bairstow's wicketkeeper batsman was working, but he was forced to up the order to sort problems out elsewhere. And you know, they haven't quite solved that problem with their wicketkeeper batsman, and Jos Buttler came back and he's played one or two, you know, excellent innings, but there hasn't been that sort of consistency, that weight of runs that you need from your wicketkeeper. And you know, his catching rate is actually not that bad. He's around about 92%. Andy Zoltzman, the BBC statisticians, has looked it up. But I suppose, well, here definitely, in the point you were making before the break, that chances are a premium. So if you drop one, it's really highlighted because England don't create as many as they do at home. And then, you know, there was one against Pakistan, wasn't there? A missed stumping against Pakistan at Old Trafford, and that was highlighted as well. It felt like a crucial moment at the time, but actually Buttler came out in the second innings, England chasing and playing magnificently, and with Chris Wokes helped England win that Test match at Old Trafford where there were no spectators. It was a brilliant game of cricket, and Buttler, in the end, triumphed over adversity. I mean, the thing is, when you start losing, you start to look at individuals in the side and you start to think, well, how can you improve it? And people start to say, he shouldn't play and he shouldn't play and he shouldn't play. But it seems to me, Oz, unless some players redeem themselves in the second innings, England 2-0 down, you know, England might well have to look at changes, whether they will change the team or not. I don't know, because the problem is the players who haven't, you know, who might come in, haven't been playing either. You know, someone like Zach Crawley, well, just hasn't been playing. Bester hasn't been playing. So what do you do? Do you take out the players who've actually got some middle time or replace them with players who haven't? It's not an easy situation, is it? It's not an easy problem to solve.
very difficult. And this is the problem when you start losing, you know, and the losing gathers momentum and you change your team and that makes it even worse. And the opposition get confidence from the fact that you've had to change your team and new people come in and they're not even, they don't know what to expect. I mean, just looked up Bairstow's stats there, actually. And at number seven, the average is nearly 39. Mm. It's his best position for England. He's been moved up and down the order. In fact, he's batted in every position between 3 and 8. And his average at number 3 is 30. His number 4, 10. Number 5, 27. But at number 7, he averages nearly 39 with 300s and 650s. So, you know, that could be an option for England. And, you know, he's, unfortunately, he's one of those people, he's a sort of hokey-cokey, isn't he? He's in and he's out, and he's in and he's out, and he's up and he's down, and he's moving it all around. I mean, it must be quite hard to get stability for somebody like him, really.
Yeah, and do they go back to that option of Bairstow's wicketkeeper batsman after jettisoning it and bringing in Butler, or do they move on? They say, well, actually, no, we need to go to Ben Foulkes, you know, next in line. And, you know, there'll be decisions taken at the end of this series, especially if it goes really wrong from here. I mean, it looks like 2-0, I would say. I mean, who knows how it could end up? We both predicted 3-1 at the start of the series. And you might say at the moment, if England lose 3-1, they might be quite, you know, relieved to get out with 3-1. You know, it has at the moment, it has the sort of makings of 4-5-0 again. You know, there are signs. You know, Root Milan have just shown that it's possible that they can get together and build big partnerships, but it needs more to join in. And where are they going to get the 20 wickets from economically enough to put pressure on Australia?
They're going to get 20 wickets if they score the runs. You just have to get the runs, don't you? You have to get the runs on the board. And so Stokes is going to be a big sort of focal point, isn't he, over the next couple of test matches. I mean, today, he seems to go from one extreme to the other. He either blocks or tries to smash it. And obviously he was put under a bit of pressure today because he was batting with the tail. And so he had to do something. But he went from literally strokelessness to trying to smash every ball for 6. And I don't think that's kind of that wise either. And he needs to find so he hasn't played any test cricket for a few months, but he needs to find a tempo. And I felt he just got stuck a bit. He does want to sort of make sure he applies himself early in an innings and be dogged like Labuschagne and Smith were in the Australian innings. But he's got to find some scoring avenues as well and put the pressure back on the bowlers a little bit, especially number 5. You know, numbers 3 and 4, if you're coming in fairly early on, you have got to re-stabilise and, stabilise the innings. But, you know, coming in at number 5, especially in a good situation where it was, what, 150 for 2 or something, maybe a bit better, 170 for 2.
It came in at 150 for 3.
Yeah, 150 for 3. So, you know, you've got the chance there to move the scoring on, but he seemed to get stuck. So, you know, he needs to find that batting rhythm as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's slightly harsh. I'm going to defend Ben Stokes for this reason, is that he came in 150 for 3. Soon after, it was 157 for 4. Soon after that, it was 164 for 5, then 160 for 9 for 6. So, you know, he was watching on at the other end. Okay, admittedly, he hasn't had much cricket, and he's sort of feeling his way. And I think at the Gabba, you know, Joe Root sort of admitted afterwards, you know, that Stokes was rusty, didn't have a great game at the Gabba, just finding his rhythm. So he's sort of finding his way. At the same time, he comes in, he sees wickets falling at the other end. And I sort of actually felt today, well, he's staying in, which is more than, you know, most of his colleagues were doing in that middle order. You know, he was showing some grit, he was toughing it out, and then in the end, you know, the only reason he got out is because he had to play some shots, at 8 down. He was actually looking pretty solid, and Australia didn't really look like getting him out. But the problem is he had no support at the other end. So I don't think he's open to criticism today. Yeah, of course you'd like him to score a bit quicker, and you'd probably expect him to score a bit quicker. But A, he hasn't much cricket, and B, he had no support from the other end. So, I think today I actually quite admired that. Actually, I thought there was a sort of element of, right, well, you know, you buggers are getting out. I'm damn well not getting out. It's, you know, there's a bit of that about him, and I didn't mind that at all. I thought it needed something like that. I mean, England, we haven't seen enough of that. That middle order is too brittle. It was too brittle at the Oval on the final day. It just got blown away. Okay, Bumrah bowled well, but you know, it's just like blowing over a paper house, and it was a bit like that today as well. It's just too easy. And I'm sure, you know, lots of people back in the UK are saying that as well. You know, England show some fight, and I think Ben Stokes did that. So I'm not gonna criticise him for that innings today. 34 from 98 balls. Let's see a few more of these players bat for 9,800 balls. Anyway,
yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So there we go, Yoz. So Australia in a totally dominant position. 282 runs ahead. 9 wickets left. 2 days left. The ball is spinning and bouncing for Nathan Lyon. Everything's in Australia's favour. Even the rain tomorrow, Yoz, that's forecast for tomorrow in Adelaide, is in Australia's favour. Because do you know when it's going to fall?
In the morning.
In the morning. So even that's in their favour. So everything's going their way. And they, you know, they've totally earned the position they are in. You know, England have been feeble. To some extent, or to a large extent, ball in the field and with the bat, apart from, you know, a few notable exceptions. So, what is going to be the close of play score tomorrow after 4 days? Australia are batting under very little pressure in that first session tomorrow. 90 overs in the day. What is going to be the close of play score?
I might go first.
Yeah, you can go first. What is your score at the close of play?
England 40 for 3.
40 for 3, okay. I'm going England 80 for 4. That's my close of play score. I think Australia will pull out around about the T interval, something like that, giving England a full session to bat, and I think it's going to be quite tricky. The pressure's going to be on. They'll have been in the field for another, you know, and it's so demoralising as well. You know this as a former bowler. It's so demoralising when you're almost not bowling for wickets. You're bowling for a declaration. You know it's coming sometime. You can't control the rate. You can't get anyone out. You can't sort of get enough wickets to put pressure on a batting side. And you just know there's a declaration in sometime in the future, or they're going to get bowled out playing lots of shots, but they're going to have masses of runs on the board. So it's a tough situation to be in as a bowler, as a field, as a captain.
Yeah, well, England needs some new heroes from somewhere, and I say that because we've created this NFT collection, Ashes Heroes, 100 of the greatest Ashes heroes that have ever played the game, played for in this fantastic rivalry between England and Australia. Check it out, actually, and if you're not an NFT fan or you don't even know what it is, you might still quite enjoy reading the site, because I've assembled these 100 players and done biogs about them and tried to kind of tell the story and the history of the Ashes through it. So go and have a look at that site, ashesheroes.com, and there are some interesting options there to buy or bid for NFTs, non-fungible tokens, digital art, to add to or start your collection. It's going to be a big thing, the NFTs, in the future. So get into it now before everybody else is talking about it and you don't know what it is. That's my advice to you, Simon. But maybe okay. You should just go to bed.
Yeah, it's quite late here. It's coming up to midnight. It's not very sociable, these day-night test matches. And one thing about a day test is, you know, you do your day's work and then you can go for a drink and a meal in the evening and meet friends and colleagues and all that sort of thing. But in this situation, it's bedtime because you're absolutely shattered right at the end of a day's
play. You can have a nice long leisurely breakfast, though, instead, can't you?
Well, you can do, yeah. I think I prefer to start my day at sort of, you know, 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, really, rather than that sort of.
What you're really annoyed about is the fact that you're missing your evening Pilates.
Well, I have had to, dodge it a couple of times because we're still at the creek. The other thing as well this morning is, you talk about, you can have a long leisurely breakfast. This morning we had to go for our drive-in COVID test, our 6-day COVID test in Adelaide. So we had to spend a couple of hours in a long queue, waiting to go through a sort of tent in a park today to have our COVID tests. I'm still waiting for the results, actually. I'm hoping they'll come back negative sometime in the middle of the night. So, yeah, long old day. Bed calls, dreaming of what? Batting 150 overs to save a test match? Very, very unlikely.
Well, that's the spirit. That's the spirit. And, you know, whatever England's calamities are, it's nothing compared to the suffering that a lot of people have experienced through COVID. So Exactly. Good luck to everybody. Stay safe and hope you can enjoy Christmas despite England's terrible performances and a likely second defeat in this series. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow to try and give you some kind of more uplifting news. Speak to you then. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.